I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Final hour of Grant and Danny kicking off on 106.7 The Fan on a Football Friday. We're presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet. For real sports fans, you just heard in the update, Mike Jones of USA Today spoke with Trent Williams. So did our own Craig Hoffman. You'll hear that interview at 4 o'clock today. That's 3 hours away right here on The Fan. But we wanted to get Mike on as he had the content first thing this morning on Williams discussing in depth his back and forth with Bruce Allen and the Redskins. What was your biggest takeaway with your conversation with Trent?
I think just the fact that at one point, Trent really felt like this was something that they could have resolved. And then where the trust was violated. You know, we had heard the contract stuff, and we had heard there was a medical something, but we didn't really know. But the Redskins' reaction in his point, in his mind, that they were dismissive, that they passed it off or dismissed it as just a money grab, and that when he started seeing leaks in the media, that's really what caused the damage that made this irreparable in his mind.
Mike, help me understand one thing. It's something I've kind of struggled with here to quantify. If, given that Trent Williams doesn't trust the organization, doesn't like them, and doesn't want to be around these guys, right? Yet, he asked for a contract extension to retire as a Redskin. How does that jive? Help me understand that.
Well, that request came after the exit interviews at the beginning of the offseason, according to Trent. He said he had a 2-hour conversation with Bruce Allen about his contract. He said, I wanted to be a Redskin for life. I wanted to start that conversation so we could, you know, take steps towards that. And he said that he told Bruce, look, I know that we're in a rebuild. If you don't want to dump any more money into the offensive line, then, you know, send me somewhere else. He felt like, okay, if they really want me, obviously they're going to find a way to keep me. And that was really kind of just dismissed and blown off. And he said, I had a lot of anger about that. But then after he got the surgery, had the tumor, and he found out that it actually was cancer, and the way that afterwards the Redskins still were just very dismissive, and he started seeing some negative, you know, reports, he said that was the breaking point. He had asked for the contract extension and according to him, before any of that happened. And so after that point, when he was expecting the Redskins to be up, you know, how can we make it better? And they never were. And then that's where things just really started to break down in his mind.
Mike Jones, USA Today is where you can find some of this content. Again, we'll have more insight on this with our own Craig Hoffman at 4 o'clock today on The Fan. He has since gotten a hold of Trent as well. All right, Mike, I guess let's delve into the actual, you know, back and forth about how the treatment came down. I know that you can't get into the specifics if you're Trent or the team because of different violations, but he tried to kind of defend himself with, yeah, I missed an appointment, but here's why. Yeah, we could have done it this way, but we didn't. I'm wondering, do you buy 100% his side of the story that he did everything he was supposed to and could have, and the team basically is 100% at fault?
I don't think that the team is 100% at fault. I think they're, you know, you hear the old saying, there's one side, there's the other side, and there's the in-between. You know, I think in Trent's mind, you know, I've talked to him. I've known him since he was a rookie. You've known him. He's a genuine guy. I think that he feels like he did everything that he was supposed to do as far as trusting the doctors that they weren't steering him the wrong way. I think that he got bad advice. I think his agent failed him, and that when his agent found out that the Redskins were dismissive or told him it was a cyst and he knew that there were still concerns in Trent's mind, he should have set up for him to go to another doctor to get a second opinion. That was not something that happened because Trent was, you know, counting on the Redskins. He asked them, you know, about it a couple times. He asked them to send him to a dermatologist, and it was told it was a cyst. And then he had a knee surgery. He said, hey, can we just take the thing out of my head while you're there? They said, nah, wait till the off season. And I think that that's where the failing on his part was, that he was too trusting. You know, his version of the thing about the missed appointments was that he had a day off. And look, the Redskins, what could they have done differently when, you know, you told a guy, hey, look, we don't think it's this. And if he did miss appointments, I don't know what they could have done differently from that regard. In Trent's mind, when it was found out that it was cancer, he was very appreciative that Dan Snyder used his jet, flew him to Chicago, to Houston for a second opinion, back to Chicago. But he said that in talks with Bruce, Bruce was always very dismissive of it. And once he saw media leaks that he was unhappy about the, he wanted it to be traded because of the contract. And then the things about missed appointments, he felt like they were trying to paint him into a negative light there. I still think there's some dots that, that we can't fully connect. You know, I tried to get a hold of Bruce Allen. Obviously, there's stuff that, you know, I wasn't expecting him to respond because it's medical stuff, but wanted to give him a chance. But we might not ever fully know what exactly the full extent of the missteps on each side's part are.
Mike Jones, USA Today, with us here. Great piece on Trent Williams and the distrust he now has for Bruce Allen and the Redskins. From Trent's perspective, and you mentioned the kind of he referred to it as poison pills and just kind of stuff out there trying to make him look worse. We've seen that playbook before, certainly from the Redskins. In his mind, what do you think? What does he think the Redskins are hoping here? Like, let's say for the sake of argument that somehow the Redskins are, quote, vindicated in all this and proven that they were right and that Trent Williams was wrong somehow. I don't know how that could be possible. Just hear me out. Let's say the Redskins are correct. Do you think Trent Williams just goes, oh, okay, in that case, I'll just come back and play for you, right? What does he think they're trying to do here?
Well, he thinks that they're just trying to absolve themselves of any guilt. You know, he said that, hey, any efforts now are just CYA. He said if they were really serious about this, when they first heard that the diagnosis had been wrong, they would have looked into their medical staff. They would have found out, okay, why is this a problem? He said they would have looked into Colt McCoy's situation. He had surgery, was supposed to have a quick comeback, had an infection, had a setback, had to have multiple surgeries. Darius Geis, infection, another surgery. Alex Smith, multiple setbacks. He said there's been guys over the years for many times that have been misdiagnosed, stuff wrong by the medical squad. I think that in his mind, if the Redskins had looked into that stuff, tried to get it right, that would have been something that gave him more confidence that they did realize they had a problem. But again, when he saw negative reports, if they're, you know, and he says this investigation, no matter what the outcomes are, he expects the Redskins are going to just try to, you know, spin it their way. And that's why he was like, there's no point in me taking part in this investigation.
I mean, it's a third-party investigation, so you could drown out what the team says, what he says. I personally, just throwing my opinion out there, I think it looks bad for him to not take part in this. One last thing, and you alluded to this, but I want to hammer down on it real quick. We got less than a minute. Tell me why I'm wrong here. It's pretty simple. I've talked to a lot of agents about this, and they're all shocked that he didn't get a second opinion out of the building. I know you mentioned that maybe his agent led him astray. That's hard for me to get past in terms of – I'm not saying that the Redskins aren't in the wrong here, but in terms of him kind of just being the victim and them being the bad guy, at any point for basically 6 years, my understanding is he could have gone and sought out whatever opinion he wanted to.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. Everybody I've talked to in the league outside of that building will tell you that his agent is a guy who has been in over his head, isn't the most savvy. I think Trent's fault in this is that he's too trusting. Just like Dan Snyder's fault is that he's too trusting of Bruce Allen, I think Trent was too trusting of his agent. He said he assumed that the doctors weren't steering him wrong. I don't think the doctors were steering him wrong, but you have to take a little bit of ownership there. And I think, you know, he'll probably learn from this a little bit. And you hope so anyway. And I do agree with you. Yes, his agent is the guy that should have been like, hey, Trent, I'm here to advise you. This is what you should do right here. If Trent didn't have that intuition himself, his agent's job was to make sure that that was taken care of.
Mike, great work as always on this story, man. Appreciate the time again this week.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you, buddy.
It's a great story. There's Mike Jones of the USA Today. More on Trent Williams at 4 today on The Fan. Chris Russell's in for Chad. Craig Hoffman talked to Trent. They'll have some of that interview for you coming up in less than 3 hours right here on The Fan. I want to get into Antonio Brown next. We haven't talked about him on the show for a while. It's got to be just burning inside that Antonio Brown hadn't had any attention on him lately, so he went on a little Twitter rant yesterday.
Can we talk about the burner account?
We got it, and we got to talk about his burner account that's been found as well. G&D on The Fan. A vanity-filled tweet saying that he wanted the league to clear his name, reiterating that he'll never play again. Sources tell Josina Anderson that Brown is scheduled to meet with the league next week concerning accusations of sexually assaulting multiple women. Remember, that was why he ultimately got released by the New England Patriots.
That's right.
Although I guess it wasn't right after those allegations.
I think it was, right?
Was it immediate?
I think it was pretty soon thereafter.
Okay.
He played once, and then they were like, yeah, this seems like it's serious, and you're done, if I've got my timeline right. I think that's right.
I thought Bill Belichick had a press conference like before practice that morning where they hadn't cut him yet and was like, we're going to see what happens. And then like later in the day, he was gone. But maybe it was all the fallout of that coverage. I don't remember the specifics, so I'll defer. Here's a quote, though, from his tweet yesterday. Imagine conforming to a system, giving it 100% to see them treat me like this is unfairly, Brown said on Twitter. Making money off my sweat and blood, bleep the NFL. I'll never play in that bleep. Treat black people the worst. Clear my name and go bleep yourself, end quote. That was Antonio Brown on Twitter yesterday in the afternoon. He posted something on Instagram with a very similar discourse and then deleted that almost immediately. Wrote that he was going down another path. And apparently he told all the fantasy football players who have been contacting him, let it go. But then later yesterday on Thursday afternoon, he completely changed his tune as if the first comment had never happened. And he came out and said, and I quote, I'm just very frustrated right now with the false allegations and slander to my name. I love football and I miss it. I just want to play, and I'm very emotional about that. I'm determined to make my way back to the NFL as soon as possible. One of those feels like maybe Drew Rosenhaus or somebody got to him and said, hey, let's tighten up a little bit.
Yeah, why don't you lock this up?
It wasn't the first one. But in the same day, he comes out and says he's never playing again. Screw you. You mistreat me. You treat me badly. And then he says, sorry, I'm just angry. But this is more evidence of the volatility and the, and it's kind of sad, but
the wild mood swings that are completely opposite. Yeah.
I don't even want to use the word bipolar because I'm not saying it is in a medical sense. Like that's the issue that he has. But, you know, just in terms of the undulation between hour to hour, what you get from him, it's craziness.
So I went back and looked while you were talking at the timeline. So remember the assault allegations were there, and he plays for the Patriots.
That's what I thought. There was a game after that.
There was a game. What undid it, finally, where they said that's enough because he's on triple secret probation.
That Robert Klemko story.
Yeah, that's right. The artist that was commissioned to do some work for him at his place that, you know, was half finished, and he refused to pay her, sent her threatening messages. That became public, and they said, okay, that's it. You're done.
Gotcha. So, yeah, the assault allegations, the Patriots, I won't say they had no problem with it. But he played a game with
all that going on and caught a touchdown.
And they were just ready to ride that storm. They were going to ride right through those rocky waters. But it wasn't until he started firing off those text messages, good memory.
That's right.
Where basically they're like, wait, what are we doing here with this guy? We told him this is a straight and narrow or you're out situation. There is no margin for error here. There is no leash. It's very simple. Act like a pro and an adult and stay within our rules and our guidelines or you're gone. And when that happened, he was out. Do you think he ever plays in the league again?
I think not.
I don't either.
And I bet you right now, if this is, you know, how do I say this the right way?
Takes one GM that wants to improve their roster with a great wideout, though.
I bet you if whatever he's going through and doing and the way he's behaving, let's just say snap your fingers and it doesn't exist. Skill-wise, he could do it this year, next year, and for another few years. Probably, right? But how could you, in good conscience, if you couldn't do it with the Patriots, where their button-down culture is as close to perfect as you can find. They're like the Borg. If you're familiar with Star Trek, The Next Generation, everybody assimilates. Resistance is futile. You just do what they tell you to do, and you win a bunch of games. If you couldn't do it there, what team's culture is strong enough to deal with it? Right? I mean, he's the kind of guy that gets you fired if you do it at this point. You take that kind of a risk. You know? I don't know. I don't see it happening again. I don't see him just all of a sudden getting right and being able to be counted upon. I don't.
The last part of this story last night that came out that was amazing is that there's a guy on Twitter who covers the NFL who it looks like found a Twitter account that really seems like it's a burner account for Antonio Brown. And for those of you, because I know a lot of you are probably not on Twitter, basically that means these celebrities and athletes oftentimes will come up with their own Twitter accounts to basically defend themselves. And they'll mask it pretty well so you don't know it, although this is not a well-masked
account. It's not very well-masked.
But basically, it was created within the last several days, I think actually yesterday. And all this account does is defend Antonio Brown and tell people that are saying mean things to Antonio Brown off. And it's written as if Antonio Brown was tweeting and typing.
Yeah, written in his style with
no
some
avatar.
Of the same messaging. Yeah,
I mean, it's hilarious. And they've already found out that like this has to be Antonio Brown. Burner account. It's pretty comical. You know, at this point, though, there was a time where every time there was an Antonio Brown story that came out, it was my Super Bowl, and I loved it. It was my favorite thing in the world because this guy was just such a goose. I am past that now to the point of, A, I don't really care. He's not in the league anymore. And my hope is he never is again. But, B, I feel bad for him from a mental standpoint.
Yeah.
I hope he gets his act together because you don't want some terrible, awful story where this ends really, really sadly.
And so, I hate to jump to that conclusion, but that's what I'm worried about, honestly. That's
what
I
fear. It's not even fair for us to talk about because he could be perfectly 100% healthy and reasonable and just have crazy opinions.
Sure. I'm not doing an armchair diagnosis. It was the same thing I felt, and this is obviously a much smaller scale and nowhere near this, but with Sua Cravens. I'm not just going to start assigning disorders to somebody when I don't know. I'm not going to – if it's proven and that comes out, okay, then we can have the appropriate level of sympathy. But I don't do pre-sympathy. I don't do – you know, sort of pre-understanding. I know this. Troubling signs are taking place with Antonio Brown. And I guess that's kind of the point here.
Yeah.
It doesn't look right. And I worry about the worst case in this situation, which could be pretty dramatic.
The extremes.
The extremes.
It's just hour to hour. One crazy statement and then another statement that completely contrasts it. And it's almost like he doesn't remember what he said. Or like they somehow work together for him. And they're opposite comments that are the antithesis of one another. Next, we're going to talk with Chip Patterson, CBS College Sports. LSU plays Alabama in a huge weekend. College football, you're listening to The Fan. If you're a big college football fan, you've been looking forward to this weekend for a while. If you're not, you're still going to watch a lot of college football on Saturday. It's a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Some of these matchups are outstanding, and to help us break them down, college football and basketball writer for CBS Sports, also the host of the Cover 3 podcast, Chip Patterson, joins us. And Chip, we're Grant and Danny. Appreciate you hopping on. We'll get to Alabama LSU, but because of the magnitude of that game, I think everyone's sleeping a little bit on some of the other matchups this weekend. Iowa, Wisconsin, 18-16, going to be really, really good. Penn State, Minnesota, 5-13, awesome. I like Baylor, TCU, 1.5-point spread for number 11 team in the country. It's going to be maybe the best weekend of college football yet this year.
I mean, we've had November 9th circled for so long, and I'll tell you when I first circled it, it actually is LSU-focused. I was in Austin, and I was there for that game against Texas, and my lingering thought coming away from the interviews in the locker outside the locker room afterwards was, I think this is the team that is going to end Alabama's run. I mean, that is such a massive idea, given the way that Alabama has dominated every single team in that conference, that someone's just going to knock off the king and throw a punch and maybe do it in their own house. But to answer your question, yes. I mean, the whole schedule is loaded with implications, both within I think the Big 12 conference title race is a really, really fun story. And you mentioned that Baylor game coming up. I think there's a Kansas State-Texas game that's very, very interesting also in the Big 12. So in the process of looking around for storylines, man, you don't have to look far. And, hey, let me throw another one on your radar. So USC just named its new athletic director, right? Clay Helton is in a really tricky spot going up against Herm Edwards at Arizona State. And I think that game's getting national TV treatment too. So between the conference title and the college football playoff, like, we kind of knew that this was going to be a significant weekend. But as we sit here on Friday, yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm salivating thinking about what all is going to unfold tomorrow.
All right, Chip, let's get into it. LSU, Alabama. First, let's start with LSU. How and why will they win this football game?
I think that Alabama has some weaknesses, at least in this matchup, on the interior of their defense. You remember they suffered some injuries during preseason camp, and we were going into it and like, oh my goodness, Alabama is going to have all these freshmen and these young and inexperienced players starting at the linebacker position and sort of the interior of the defense. They're experienced on the back end at cornerback and safety, pretty solid there. But, you know, this isn't an overwhelmingly dominant front seven compared to what we're used to with Alabama. And not that they're not talented, they just haven't had enough time in college football to really stand out and pop. And so I think that as Joe Burrow and that LSU offense is moving the ball, I think they're going to have some real opportunities to exploit those players. I mean, the offense that they're running is a lot of the run-pass option. It is take a middle linebacker, make him make a tough decision. And in a game of that magnitude that's going to be going so fast, I think LSU really likes the idea that they've got inexperienced players that they're going to be putting in that tough position. So, you know, I like Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson of the wide receivers. They just might make plays. But it's some of those check down in the middle of the field stuff that I think Joe Burrow's going to take advantage of. And listen, LSU's one of the top scoring offenses in the country. They are one of the best red zone offenses of the country. 43 of 44 red zone trips end up in scores. And their average touchdown drive right now is less than 3 minutes. This is all about pace. And LSU just has to dictate it. They got to start fast. They got to score fast. They got to play the game that they want to play because, I mean, I guess you're going to say, how does Alabama win? I think one way that Alabama wins is by playing keep away from Joe Burrow.
So get into that a little bit. At Chip underscore Patterson, for Chip Patterson, our guest, college football analyst for CBS Sports. Go more in depth with Alabama, because you mentioned the defense hasn't been what we're used to from them, but offensively, they're unbelievable, and they got a million first-round picks, it seems like, on that side of the football. Why will they win?
I mean, because it's Alabama. Nick Saban's had 2 weeks to prepare for them. It's at home. I mean, it's, you know, as you track the way the betting line is moving on this, you know, before it's, I think I decided earlier, I was like, look, you're just, I think LSU is going to win. I'm going to trust my eyes. I'm not going to trust all the other stuff. And I think the Vegas odds makers are looking down at their power ratings and they're looking at all of that talent on that Alabama roster. And they're just like, no, that's an NFL team. I'm going to make them a touchdown favorite at home. That's the way this works. Then all of a sudden you realize LSU's the trendy underdog. And you what? Trendy underdogs have fleas, right? So now I start thinking in my head, just doing cartwheels. I'm like, well, now Alabama's going to win by 10. And one way I think Alabama wins is by just playing a little bit of keep away, by forcing some three and outs, by that secondary that I mentioned. How about Patrick Surtain the second, Trevon Diggs, Xavier McKinney? Those are the names you're going to watch in this game because we haven't really seen Alabama's secondary be tested. And you mentioned the NFL players, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. I think Alabama's secondary might be like, wow, who's that guy? He's really good. And then all of a sudden, just like every year, we're going to see some Alabama players taken in the first three rounds of the NFL draft. So, you know, if they can force some three and outs, and then again, like Alabama this year runs more of a Big 12 offense. They haven't really utilized the fullback and the tight end, but they can still move the ball and they can still dink and dunk and they can still take their time hoping to wear down LSU's defense. And that's an LSU's defense in the same way that we talk about Alabama. Yes, they are super talented, but as a result of the offense they're playing opposite of, they've given up a lot of yards and they've given up a lot of points. And I think that if Alabama can control time of possession, that's a big way how Alabama wins. Listen, Nick Saban's the GOAT. He's the greatest college football coach of all time. So who am I to lay out the game plan for this game? But I sort of, as I envision it, one way that I see Alabama win is it's almost like a boring win, the kind of win that disappoints you. That's what Alabama does with these games. We get so excited about the team that we love, LSU, the coach that we love, Coach O, and like the Joe Burrow Heisman Trophy story in this wide open offense. But then you get to the game, and Nick Saban just boa constrictors the life out of you. That isn't what Alabama has done this year, but I know Nick Saban's got notebooks full of ways to make it happen.
Chip, before I let you go real quick, picking college football games this year, whenever I've got a huge, huge number, it doesn't matter how good the team is, I almost always take the other team in the points. I'm wondering, when you look at like Ohio State, Maryland, 42.5, Clemson, NC State, 30.5, I would even throw Florida, Vanderbilt, 24.5. Like, of those teams, do you expect all three to be able to cover, or would you say someone should be on alert there that maybe a dog in the points would make sense?
42 is so many for a conference game.
That's just
so
a lot.
Many points.
Unbelievable. I'll tell you what. I think that before the Chase Young news that he would not play against Maryland as they look into an potential NCAA issue from 2018, I was going to say just like even lay it with Ohio State. But now that's just a weird atmosphere around that program. I don't know about the collective headspace of that team playing at home. I could see Maryland covering that number, but I just don't know how many points Maryland's going to score, even with Chase Young not in the game. I would say that if you're looking for it, maybe Vandy, just because, and honestly, in that game, well, because this is my move, is I look at that, I'm like, all right, Florida's going to be able to dominate every aspect of this game against Vanderbilt. But is Florida even going to be playing with the urgency of a team that's trying to cover a 26-point spread? So you could be taking Vandy right there, but I'm thinking about the under, because the same way is I just don't think I don't know how many points Vandy's going to score.
Chip, this was awesome, man. Really appreciate it. Let's do it again soon.
All right, sounds good. Y'all be well.
We'll see you, buddy.
Take care. Really good segment. That was great. Love the information, the energy. Let's talk some college football with him again. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We've got one segment left, and then Chris Russell takes over at 2 o'clock. We'll look ahead to the weekend, make a couple of picks. Tell you what we got on the docket Saturday and Sunday.
Danny Ruye here for my friends at the St. James. There's no offseason, not at the St. James anyway. The DMV's hottest destination for sports, wellness, and active entertainment. The St. James is a sports utopia. There's something for everyone. They got expert instructors coaching their teams and leading training for more than 20 sports. I probably can't think of 20 sports. If you gave me an hour, maybe I could. There's like high lie in there, squash, stuff like that. They got it. A former member of the U.S. men's national team is teaching kids how to play soccer. Think about that. It's not just some like local dad who's like, get your elbow up when you throw. No, they don't know anything. These are high-level coaches there at the St. James. Plus, if your kid's not into that sort of thing, he or she can hang out at the Active Entertainment Center. Climbing and bouldering walls, trampolines, VR games, ropes course, massive water park. It's the perfect place to host a birthday party. And, of course, for you, the Top of the Line Health Club offers the best equipment, weights, dedicated personal trainers to help you achieve your body goals. Every new member gets 2 complimentary health assessments with a personal trainer. With so much under one roof, you got to see it to believe it. Visit thestjames.com to learn more and schedule a tour. That's thestjames.com. St. James, welcome to your best.
I just looked up which team in the NFL runs the ball the most on 1st and 10 in the first half of games. You say, why in the first half? Well, because in the second half, if you're trailing, you have to throw it. And so the first half is generally when you get to do what you want to do.
That's who you really are.
The Redskins run the ball 67% of the time on 1st and 10 in the first half of games. 67%, that's number one or number 32, depending how you look at it.
What are you looking forward to most in the year 1994? Like, I'm trying to decide. Like, I think my sophomore year of high school will be good. I'm looking forward to buying some more CDs. Like, it's so outdated and antiquated. We just know too much.
The Chiefs, number one in the league. Fewest rushing attempts on 1st and 10 in terms of percentages in the first half. New England, by the way, is third in that category. Those two teams, two best teams probably in the AFC.
Well, wait, but no, Grant, that's not right, because I've heard so much about how New England is now a power running team. They've got the fullback, and they're really about downhill running, and nope, just
they
smart.
Are. They put games away.
Yep, they're just really smart is what they are.
But they throw to set up the run. 67% of the time for the Redskins this year.
There you go.
They run on first down.
Tell me more about Bill Callahan, though.
Success rate, 43% when they do it. They average about 4.1 yards per carry.
It's actually not as bad as I thought it would be, honestly.
43% success rate?
Yeah, I thought it would be worse.
Yeah,
given just the eye test, my memory bank.
More often than not around the league, teams are averaging more than that. But yeah, it's anecdotally, it feels a lot worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the average goes up because you might rip off 17 or 20 or whatever.
Yep.
And that makes up for 7 zero-yard runs. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, it's kind of evened out. But
and they
anyway.
Are running the ball better under Bill Callahan, in fairness. Now, that doesn't translate into wins or points or exciting offense or anything dynamic or anything worth doing, but they are, and that's cute. But when Jay Gruden did it, it was that much more frustrating because their running game was terrible. It was terrible, and he'd be like, yeah, let's run on first down to make sure we get that second and nine, because otherwise, what are you going to do?
I'm sure people will say I'm trolling or something, and I'm really not trying to. How is it possible that Maryland is a 43-point underdog in a conference game?
People got so mad at me before the start of the year when I was looking at the over-unders, and I don't follow it that closely, you know, whatever, but I said, Maryland's over-under for wins is 4. Are we okay? We're just fine with that? This is just what we're doing? And I understand it's a new coach. I get that everything that's going on, I'm aware of the information, but we're just...
Maybe that's part of it. It's a new coach, and they had, you know, tragically a kid die on their campus at a practice,
horrible,
so they've been through a lot. But... like, my response is, I tweeted out, I'm like, how is it possible that Maryland's a 43-point underdog within the conference? That's like a Rutgers-y type thing. And everyone's going, they're playing Ohio State, man. You're right. They went to the Big Ten. Like, you just go to the Big Ten and it's okay. Well, we're playing Ohio State this weekend, so we're going to be underdogs by 7 touchdowns. We're okay with that? Everybody's cool? Okay. I guess.
Wasn't the idea that they were going to be able to compete at some point with these teams? With all this new money that's supposed to come in? I mean, have they gotten all that yet?
Well,
I don't know, man.
Maybe the rebuttal is as simple as give Mike Locksley some time.
And he deserves time. I'm not writing the epitaph. I mean, to me, though, my axiom, of course, comes into play. That's unassailable and correct. I just think the ceiling is lower than they think it is. And I guess ultimately that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I say all that to tell you I'm picking Maryland in my college football pick'em pool.
To cover? Weekend.
It's just too many points.
It's a lot of points.
Like, Dar was joking, or I don't know if he was joking or not, but he said Ohio State might win like 63-3. Maybe. But I can't in good faith look at a team getting 43 points in a conference game and not just take them. Like, you might accidentally get off to a quick start and be up 17-3. I mean, I'm not saying Tom said no chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Be,
but it's 43 points in a conference game. They're not Valparaiso.
But even with the idea of running against a side where the, you know, probably the first overall pick in next year's draft, Chase Young would be, even if you do that, the replacement backup player for Ohio State at that position is still better than half of the roster for Maryland.
So let's look at some recent results. Michigan doesn't have the offense that Ohio State has, 38-7. That's a 31-point loss.
I win.
You would have won had it been 42 and changed then.
But that's with Michigan's defense.
Minnesota, 52-10. They lost. 52-10.
You're kind of trying to sway me right now.
On the road against Minnesota. Now, Minnesota's tough at home.
BJ Fleck, row the boat.
But, man, that's 42 points against Minnesota.
I would have won that by the hook. 42.5.
You're going to Ohio State. This isn't the horseshoe.
Yeah. It's just too many points. I'm sorry.
I hear what you're saying.
You remember when I had my little dog kennel, March Madness?
Dude, I remember the
my
kennel
club. My general philosophy in life is if you're giving me a lot of points, I'm going to take those points. That's my general philosophy.
Dude, the Paulson Kennel Club was great on March Madness.
It was
right?
great.
Now, were you just picking games or ATS? Were you going against the spread or were you just picking the games?
That was all against the spread.
It is a lot of points. And the point, my counter to you, is that it's a lot of points for wonderful reasons, for correct assessments. There's a reason the point total is that
huge. So you
think
Ohio State wins by more than 43?
I happen to. Now, I'm not betting on it because it's a bad tail to chase.
I mean, this is like a thing I'm in with buddies for a couple bucks.
But in a pick and pull, you can give me the Ohio State University.
Mm. What do you care about this weekend? What do you got on the docket?
Saturday, I've got a couple of the youth sports games that are going to get in the way.
Are the Wolfpack playing?
Wolfpack are back in action. We had a week off due to the Nationals parade, but we're back at it. And then I've got the final baseball game of the fall season. Thank you very much, Wolfpack.
Who are they?
The Eagles, I think.
The Eagles. It's not as cool as
not as cool as.
So what are you going to tell the Wolfpack? Let's hear your pregame speech for tomorrow,
guys. Let's hurry up and get out of here. Well, we got a big college football game coming up later.
I'm so inspired to go score a goal.
You should be inspired. No, it's have fun, cheer for each other, and make sure we pay attention and get water on the sidelines. It's big deal for us, though, because I'm going to have to do some DVR situation because I actually want to see this LSU Alabama thing.
That's 3:30. He'll be back by the time the Wolfpack are done.
Wolfpack started two Little League games at 3:15.
Oh, wow.
So I got to do it and then jump home.
I'm hoping to be in Charlestown on Sunday. I'm questionable with Achilles.
Yeah, we'll You're going to be there because Thom will be there. You'll be there.
You're questionable with the guilt.
There's even a little tingling that drab T-shirt might be there as well.
Ooh, drabby. We're going three deep. I'm questionable with Achilles, not Achilles. But I want to be there. I'd like to eat steak.
You're going to be there.
Get some buffalo wings. Sit at the Skybox.
I'll see you at 10 a.m.
What's the earliest you've ever eaten wings in a day?
Oh, airport probably. 9:14. I really think someone told me, by the way, that skin like on the chicken is bad for cholesterol. I think that's why my cholesterol's probably gone up. Because that's now my new snack all the time. It's like, yeah. I'll just have five or six wings.
Because they're so good.
And I mean, there's probably times where I'll eat wings 25 times in a month. Because it's just chicken. It's grilled. I don't get it fried. And I tell myself, oh, it's just grilled chicken. But that skin on that chicken might be bad for the old cholesterol. That's what I'm being told.
Mm. So
some people are telling me this.
It's a good FYI.
Some rumblings.
What's the cholesterol deal if you go to the Epic Buffet at the Hollywood Casino?
Does it go up or down?
I think it goes down. I think if you go on a Sunday when there's NFL games being played, I think it goes down.
That is science.
To the listener who sent us a Team 980 towel for the Nats championship parade.
You're either trolling or it's hilarious.
Right. It's either hilarious or you're like trying to, I don't know what's going on. But
it's hilarious both ways.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I liked it a lot.
Shots fired.
We'll hang it in the studio. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Chris Russell, who used to work there. Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.